Thank you for listening to this audio recording from LimoPlanet 2020 Free the Future. The following talk was presented at LimoPlanet, the Free Software Foundation's annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology. For more information on LimoPlanet, visit limoplanet.org/conference. LimoPlanet is a live conference with speakers who often use visual slides in their presentations. We have only selected talks for this audio feed that do not overly rely on visuals, but if you would like to see a speaker's slides, they are available at media.limoplanet.org. LimoPlanet speakers do not represent the Free Software Foundation. As part of our mission to show how important free software is to everyone, we have speakers talking about their use of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take positions on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedoms of all computer users, LimoPlanet is made possible by thousands of individuals who, like you, donate what they can. To keep this work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join or making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss.
All right. We are coming to time, probably. It's right to start now. Hello, everybody. This is LibrePlanet 2020, and we are, well, just at the one of the last speeches that is going to be given. And here we are with Patrick Messon, and he's going to give us his presentation, the four freedoms. Sorry for that, Patrick, really just, my tongue doesn't just go easy on me today. And he's going to, sorry, just correct me after you started, sorry for that. The presentation about the software licenses and the people are facing from various organizations at trouble, facing some trouble from the organizations around the world about the enforcement of these licenses. And well, I will be watching the IRC channel, and Patrick going to have some questions at the end of his presentation. I will be watching the IRC channel, taking your questions aside, and then I will be asking Patrick about your questions. So if you have any questions for Patrick, go to IRC channel and just type it whatever you like to, and it will be asked to Patrick. So Patrick, stage is yours. Good luck.
Great, thank you. Well, first, I want to start by thanking the organizers and the tech crew for LibrePlanet. I can't imagine the work and creativity and late nights that have gone into pulling this off on such short notice. Congratulations on pulling it off. Thank you for all your work. Prior to my current role, I was with UMass Online, which is the University of Massachusetts online learning platform, and before that, the SUNY Learning Network. So I really appreciate the skill and dedication and know-how that's needed to run a forum like this. So thank you again for all your hard work. As was mentioned, I'm just Patrick Masson. I'm the general manager of the Open Source Initiative. And I wanted to talk about what I've sort of been calling the four freedoms, which is a bit of a play on the four freedoms, which I'm sure most folks in this audience are well aware of. So in 2016, Wired Magazine declared that open source had won, but considering the venue that we're at, I thought we'd update that a bit. Sorry, just checking to make sure my slides are updating. But considering the venue that we're at, I thought I'd update this. And considering the history and foundational impact of the free software movement, I think it's fair if we edit Wired's headline here. Let's see. So I think most folks would probably agree, even ardent critics of open source and free software are now apparently in love with open source and free software. I doubt many of these organizations are fully embracing the driving principles of software and user freedom. And as I'll cover later on in the talk, they may only be at best leveraging or perhaps at worst exploiting our communities. Looking at adoption, an argument can easily be made that open source and free software have won, according to Synopsis Center for Open Source Research and Innovation. Nearly all applications include open source or free software. One note, this statistic did come from Synopsis, I think it's worth considering, does the statistic serve to highlight the benefits of open source and free software and software user freedom, or does it do the statistics really further Synopsis's businesses? One of the original points made in the FUD arguments around free software was it's built by people in their basements. It's poor quality. It's not secure. Some companies may exploit this, offering products and services that capitalize on the fear, uncertainty, and doubt that many may still believe open source and free software is inherent and that it's not professional grade software. According to the 2019 Open Source Program Survey from NewStack and Linux Foundation, 93% of companies use open source code for non-commercial reasons. That would be things like, their infrastructure and internal systems, things they keep that they use to keep the business running. Another 79% use open source and free software in their commercial products themselves. So they're releasing code or products or offering services that rely specifically on free software. 60% of companies have created their own open source or free software projects. And the survey respondents included businesses from retail, automotive, manufacturing, others, organizations, companies that aren't traditionally considered, tech companies. The 2019 State of Enterprise Open Source from Red Hat reported a growing use of open source software. Here again, I think it's fair to ask what Linux Foundation and Red Hat's motivation are. I think it might be obvious to increase adoption of those customers, but more nuanced is the messaging used. I would never claim any specific piece of software is better than other options only because it has an open source or free software license. There's plenty of badly written open source and free software out there that, I know because we've written it. But the idea again here is that the promotion of these organizations that have an interest in the adoption of open source and free software and the messaging that's used around it. We'll talk about that a little bit more. While nowhere at its peak, you can see the peak there, according to Crunchbase Investment in companies delivering products and services built around open source and free software is still trending up. Interestingly, at least to me, these businesses are often called, quote, open source companies to signify they are somehow engaged with the open source community. I doubt, however, whether they would completely align themselves with the community-based ethos of the open source and free software movements, especially around things like transparency and collaboration, decision-making, definitely probably not around profits. However, if you're looking for funding today, apparently calling yourself an open source company might be a good approach. A global forecast from Markets and Markets, not really sure, of that organization, but are projecting revenue growth for free and open source software related businesses growing to almost $33 billion by 2022. So I guess it's a good time to actually be an open source company if you're looking for funding. The success of open source software and free software as seen in enterprise adoption that we just talked about, corporate and venture VC investment, marketing approach promotions has created an environment where some choose to align themselves with the movement while dismissing community norms, fundamental tenets, community expectations, and recognized practices. So just what does open source and free software mean? And what attributes must be present to use those labels? How do we determine if these projects and the communities that support them are indeed free software communities, open source software communities? How do we assess their authenticity? Where's that seal of approval? Now let's think about it the other way around, just to sort of hold ourselves to the same standard. How do we convey in our own projects our authenticity and commitment to open source or free software projects and the ethos of software freedom and user freedom? And how would external organizations, people assess us and look at us to see if our projects are aligned with the values and principles of open source and free software? You'll remember Wired said we won, but I think the most important part of the headline is the second sentence. Now what? From the article, the author writes or offers, though the community has proved that open source and free software, I'll add that in there, is among the most important ideas in the history of technology, it faces a whole new set of tests. A whole new set of tests as it transforms from scrappy underdog to the pillar of mainstream. And those new tests, I think, are that's a fair question. Now that we've gained this success as a movement, what are the issues that now come up? You know, the FUD was, oh, there's no support. Who do you call in the middle of the night when something breaks? Oh, how good can it be if it was built by a bunch of hackers in a basement? You know, it's not secure. There's a big, long list. But now there's people are engaging. Other issues are popping up. And those issues are the whole new set of tests. So project maturity and sustainability. How can projects ensure continued operational and organizational capacity as they grow? What do they need to do? How do they need to behave? How can they ensure that they can be there tomorrow through those practices? Maintainer, contributor, developer burnout. How can those who might have started projects for their own needs stay engaged when burdened with everyone else's needs? Business models. Are there opportunities to fund the project commercially? What might the impact on a project be if other companies started using the software? Social impact. What role can the project and its founders and its community have on the software's use and vice versa? How might the broader world impact the project and the community that supports it? New technologies and techniques. How can the project grow and engaging with more people and organizations while staying directed in its own goals and aligned with its own ideals as technology and communities and purpose change around it? And then licensing, what role may licensing play as well? Oh, I forgot community there. Also, how to develop the community, how to manage the community. Again, so that your original vision and direction are maintained. Did it change? Oh, and so to you see at the bottom, to address those tests, what we've seen is solutions to these questions to date, in my experience, have been to develop a whole new set of licenses. So we have these problems, and the default that seems to be prevalent is to create licenses that help address these problems. Several new licenses have been introduced to address one or more of those previously mentioned tests. I'll keep using that word, tests. A few examples include the Commons Clause that limits commercial use. Think of the tests I mentioned around sustainability, you know, money coming into the project, perhaps that helps sustain the project. Maintainer burnout, ugh, why am I doing all this work for free? Or business models, oh, how can we create a business to support this? Community development, you know, those the Commons Clause tries to in some way address those tests. Another one on the list, the cable public license. It actually forbids use by military intelligence organizations as well as for commercial use. And again, that might be something, a license to address social issues or community development and management. As I'm sure most of you know, the open source initiative's open source definition, which was derived from the Debian Free Software Guidelines, was TAN's criteria for certifying open source software licenses. When reviewing the licenses, like those referenced on the slide before, criteria 5 and 6 are often cited as reasons for not approving these licenses as open source software licenses, in quotes. If you could see me, I have the air quotes going. These criteria are criteria 5, no discrimination against persons or groups, and criteria 6, no discrimination against fields of endeavor. If you look at the four freedoms, freedom 0 also allows for users to run the program as you wish and for any purpose. Unfortunately, the success of open source and free software and the new tests I was referring to have brought in challenges to the freedoms we all know and expect when we either use or contribute to open source or free software. We seem to have a new set of freedoms, and so I'm calling them the free ums, because it's sort of like questioning, is this really freedom? I don't know, it's sort of free that allow organizations to capitalize on the success of open source and free software, but not quite engage as authentically with the communities of practice and their expectations and core principles as we might expect. So there's, and I apologize, I tried to probably cram some of these puns into, or, you know, into, they don't always fit, but so freedom 0 is the freedom to associate. So it's free washing, open washing. It actually comes from like greenwashing, saying that your product is green when it's really not. But the idea is that it has the appearance of a free software project, but, you know, really not, sort of a marketing scheme. Freedom 1 is to assert that you're actually free or open source software. So open source sounds like open. So that's, I couldn't find of a clever free, maybe if someone can, way to state the same thing. But these are actually organizations that claim their software is open source or free software, that the license is, even though it's either hasn't been approved or there's actual issues with the license that would hinder the four freedoms don't meet the criteria of the open source definition. Freedom 2 is to restrict. It's the freedom to restrict. So it's free-ish software or open source, which again sort of sounds more like, I do work for the OSI, so I apologize. There's a lot of sort of open puns more than free puns. But this is software that invokes the benefits and values of free software development and ideals, but places restrictions on user activities. And then finally, there's the post FOSS movement, which is sort of, there's a quote there, but it sort of just says, dismisses the whole idea of licenses as too much of a burden and licensing isn't needed. So these have sort of manifest in the licenses that have come out and the behaviors of organizations that are now seeking to take advantage of the success of open source. So a few examples. So here's free washing. Again, free washing could be used to promote or align yourself with the ideals and the behaviors of free software communities, but not actually delivering out of that engagement something that's free software and enjoys all the permissions and freedom of the licensing. And an example here is company called Yola, and they developed the Yola tablet and a mobile phone and launched it on through crowdfunding sites like Indiegogo and Kickstarter to create a new operating system to keep with Android and the iOS. They called it Sailfish. The campaign highlighted Yola's commitment to community, open source, and freedom. And I highlighted a few things in there. You can see the first one, Yola's core value is freedom. And also, I'd like to point out that they raised $2.5 million. You can see, I can't highlight or point to it, but if you look on the screen, you'll see $2.5 million raised in this effort. And it was loved by the press, or at least it was hyped by the press. Maybe that's even better for Yola, getting the hype. Unfortunately, the operating system, again, Sailfish, which touted Yola's use and commitment to open source and free software, did not actually allow collaboration or contributions. Sailfish was distributed with a proprietary license. Those interested could work on some of the free software projects and commit that to those projects, but Sailfish itself was not available for use. In fact, you were expressly prohibited from copying or using the code in any other way. They didn't release the source, you couldn't use it. You're prohibited through the end user license agreement. And again, the license itself was proprietary, all rights reserved. The free washing marketing ploy, if you will, was not lost on the developer community. YOLO's developer forums included things like, YOLO seems to like the idea of community and freedom, but closed source software is against both. Which parts of Sailfish are closed source and why? Anything YOLO specific is closed source, and it did include some open source tools and components, but anything Sailfish was closed source. And then last there at the bottom is YOLO deliberately misleading their customers. So again, the popularity of open source and free software is driving organizations to use that as a marketing exploit. And to date, the Sailfish has not been released, the tablet's not been released, and 16 days ago, people were asking about getting a refund. And again, that was $2.5 million that they raised just on the Indiegogo site. Open source includes organizations that are engaged in open source might be trying to address the tests associated to business models, community development, social issues, new technologies, and so on. An example here is that California released a request for proposals for an open source software solution to run their elections and balloting system. In response, the OSIT Foundation claimed in their RFP response, their software was open source, although it had not gone through the OSI's license review process. And upon review, the OSI actually found that it didn't meet the requirements of the open source definition. So it would not have been certified as an open source software license. I'll offer that it was reviewed and it wouldn't pass, as you can see in the highlighted part there, because it didn't allow for free distribution. And that's violation is the right word, but that conflicts with Freedom 2 and 3, the freedom to redistribute copies and the freedom to distribute copies of your modified versions to others. And I'll note just one thing that back in that slide, that if you notice at the top, they actually said, as an example of open source, that the OSET claimed that it was an open source license in their FAQ. Is your license truly an open source software license? And they had said yes upon their own review, but the license review process or the open source community and the OSI run would not have shown it as open source. Following up, to be fair, the OSET, and maybe they simply didn't realize that there was a process, did work with the OSI until the license did meet the open source definition and it was approved. As I mentioned previous, Cable also claimed to be free and open source. Again, however, after the OSI contacted Cable, as well as a pretty healthy dose of exposure from the open source and free software communities, they updated their messaging and included the following in their facts. So they say, oh, no, we're not open like, you know, and free like the OSI and the FSF say, but take it from there. And then again, Cable was set up to deal with the tests around perhaps sustainability, you know, no commercial use, and also sort of social issues around military related uses, intelligence agencies, and that sort of thing. Free-ish licenses invoke the benefits and values of free software development, maybe benefits derived through collaboration and community, but places restrictions on the users or activities. They may not claim their software is open source like open source or free software, But they seek to associate it with it, primarily for development benefits. Many of these licenses try to address the tests, again, from the Wired magazine, related to social issues, business models, sustainability issues, burnout, and even issues with emerging technologies, especially around cloud and other emerging technologies where we're seeing more and more open source and free software adoption. Examples include the Fair Source license, which caps the use of the software within an organization. After that cap is reached, the license must be purchased. This might actually be an example of freemium software. It's sort of an older term. The Fair and Fair Source license might be employed. It might be employing a few of the other freeums. So free-ish, in addition to free-ish. So for example, as I mentioned before, for open source and free watching, you'll see in some of the quotes, it's the new open source license, but it also says it's only 90% open. So then there's the do no harm license, which addresses the tests associated with social issues, as the authors appear to believe the work around software freedom and user freedom from organizations like the Free Software Foundation and OSI are no longer significant. Specifically, there's a quote there, we can do better than ideas written down 40 years ago. So the OSI is 20 plus years and GNU and FSF with its history. So perhaps they don't believe that the goals of when those organizations were founded are relevant, or maybe they're still relevant, but they don't address modern issues or current issues that they're concerned about. The Do No Harm license lists several specific areas where the use of the licensed software is not allowed. Please know, I don't think the OSI or FSF or any other organization engaged with open source or free software would dismiss any of these issues raised by the authors of the Do No Harm license. I'm pretty confident everyone would agree that there's real issues out there that we should be working on to fix. I'd also offer that those from the open source and free software communities would applaud their work to promote collaborative development models. And here's a list of the various issues. My point is simply to highlight how one group is attempting to solve a whole new set of tests, like those mentioned coming out of the Wired article, related with a new set of licenses. So that's really my point here, is that this is a licensing approach to address problems that we're seeing around the world. The Commons Clause is another example of a free-ish software license, which limits commercial use. Many may be aware that this was Redis's first attempt to deal with the use of their software by cloud providers, namely Amazon Web Services. Commons Clause is careful not to claim to be open source, so it's not open source software. So this is, but it's definitely free-ish software. And the companies who license their work with the Commons Clause engage in what I would say is free washing, sort of more of a marketing spin, that they're still associating themselves with the benefits of the open source and free software movements. And if you look at the developer forums, Redis is still very interested in getting your contributions to their now proprietary projects, including those like that are sold. And interestingly, many of these the licenses that are trying to address these issues are specifically around commercial use and business models are coming from the term, you know, those companies that were called open source companies. So that's sort of interesting that they're calling themselves open source companies, but they're bumping into issues about being an authentic or engaging authentically in open source and free software projects. License zero is another example that restricts commercial use. Some of the other freeums are also present here, referring to the software licensed with license zero as open source software. So that's sort of the license to associate, or the freeum to associate, and the license itself is an open source license. So it says at the top there, gainful open source development, and so on. Next is the post-FOSS, the post-free and open source software, which is the freeum to ignore. So, and might be the most common issue that I've run into. I don't think those who ignore the principles of open source and free software movements are doing it for nefarious purposes, rather that they simply may no longer appreciate the value of or the need of protections, or rather guaranteed permissions of open source and free software licenses. Possibly some people never did and see open source and free software as simply the normal state of something that's always been here or as well be there, or maybe they see it as just a pain to deal with, a burden that's no longer relevant. I first actually became aware of the post-FOSS sort of thing after GitHub. This is a few years old. I'm trying to look at the slide, the date on the slide. September 2012, so 8 years ago. So it's a bit, it's pretty old now, but it highlighted only 20% of GitHub repositories had a license. And my initial interest wasn't so much a post-open source, post-free software attitude. It was really like, oh, all these folks obviously want to engage in collaborative and development processes. They want to ensure that other people can use and modify and you know, all that stuff. But without a license in there, it's going to be by default all rights reserved, and they'll lose the benefits of the mass network effect through collaborative development, or they'll not be able to guarantee software freedom and user freedom by explicitly stating these in a license. And as an example, and again, this is a little dated, the OSI worked with Stack Exchange to, you know, what license would apply to the content contributed through Stack Exchange. Initially, for me, the issue was including a license to ensure a project could be used, modified, and shared. Since that time, I've come to realize sort of the post-FOSS also now includes those who dismiss the open source definition, the authority, or the status of the OSI as the steward of the open source definition and label, and even for the four freedoms and free software. Like, who is the FSF and the OSI to decide if my software is free and open source, or free or open source, or so again, the issues that we're trying, that I think are trying to be addressed through licensing, are those that I mentioned before, which have emerged as sort of a set of techniques that challenge our definition of and expectations around software and user freedom and the four freedoms. So rather than just complain with the time left, I thought I would offer some tools that you might be able to use to help you both assess the authenticity and the freedoms associated with a project, but also look inward on projects that you're working on or maintaining to assess whether or not others who are coming to your project are confident in the authenticity of your software, your free software project. So maturity models, and some of these are sort of old, but they're like any tool, I think a good tool can be used for a variety of things. Or maybe that's a bad analogy, is if you only, what's the saying, if you only have a hammer, everything's a nail. But I think that these tools are helpful, and they can be used today. So I'd like to go over them. So maturity models is an example, and were originally developed to assess organizations' capabilities and capacity. So what they can do, and can they do it reliably every time? And also their ability to maintain those capabilities and capacity. The models offer a progression of testable attributes of an organization that can be used to assess the reliability of the organization and its development processes, and thus its products and services. The models can also, as I said before, help the organizations themselves by providing a roadmap of, well, what do we need to do to ensure that we're reliable? So initially we started this development process or this project or this product, and how we managed it was sort of initially chaotic and relied on people doing things, heroes that pulled things off, probably a lot like this conference being online. It's like, okay, this is the initial one, and it took heroic activities of a lot of people to make it work. The question now is, could they do it again? Is it repeatable? Could you do LibrePlanet online? Would you want to? Can you define the processes that made it repeatable? do we know? Okay, we did it again, but that's still because we have Mary, and Mary did all these great things. But if Mary leaves, how does Fred know that, you know, what happened and can do those things? And then are they managed? We know what it takes to do it. We can do it again, but can we manage this in a way so the expectations that we want are met? And then now that it's running smoothly, everyone knows how it works. We've addressed the bus factor of somebody getting no longer available to work at something. Are we reflecting on things to manage the process so that it's better next time? So that's sort of the idea of a maturity model. And that might be something that you can look at free software projects, this approach to assess whether or not they're authentically engaged with the open source and free software communities. And as an example, the OSI model, we do this when we look at affiliate members. So affiliate members of the OSI are organizations that support our mission, and they're WordPress and Drupal and Python and organizations like that, and also educational institutions and other things. But for a lot of smaller projects that reach out to us, this criteria for qualifications are a bit of a maturity model. So do you have a mission statement and bylaws? And do you have a way for people to join the project and understand roles and that are available to them? Are you using, obviously, an OSI-approved license? Do you have documented approaches for organizational activities? Is there an active community of contributors? So all of these things should be present, and we ask for evidence that these attributes or these criteria are met, these qualifications are there. And if not, then the organization may not qualify as an affiliate member, but they can go back and say, hey, you know, we never formalized our governance and bylaws, or hey, we don't have a really good way to allow people to come in and contribute. We don't have an active community. It's really just a couple of people doing everything for our online conference. And so a maturity model can help you look for and look like a free software community that you think is important. I won't put in any value statement about the specific attributes. That's up to each individual community but you could ask questions like, is there a license or not? And what is that license? Is this license a something that the community would agree on, that's how we want to behave? And does the license foster that? Is the organization a foundation or a corporation? Are there risks associated with the intellectual property being associated with a corporation versus a foundation? Is it member-led, or is the leadership appointed by individuals within the organization? And is there a way for anyone who joins to gain a leadership position? Is it self-directed or managed development? Does the organization pick at what they want to do, or is it selected by people who, again, aren't representative of the community or aren't or are part of an organization, like a company that's directing the development? Are there diverse contributors and contributions, or is it, we only want the, you know, insert technology here geniuses to work on this. We don't want to do a conference, or we don't want to talk about how to engage in broader communities to expand our project. Is the project forkable? So all of these things you could develop into a maturity model that starts off with at one end of the least sort of undefined organization, and then can step through certain states until it goes from initial to optimized. And this is one we did a while ago. It's out there if you want to look at it. I put the links on. I think my slides are up, so you can grab all the links for all this stuff. But the idea was, as you progress through the things on the left, and those might sound kind of corny, like courage is one of those posters with the, you know, inspirational posters, courage with a little mouse sitting next to a lion or something, I don't know. But the courage is things like the ability to say that you're a free software project, to get out there and say, yes, free software is good, we want to participate. And then that's just saying it, but then are you participating? And then are you participating authentically and honestly? Or are you doing it just because, well, you know, it sounds good, everyone else is doing this, we'll do it too. And then you reflect. So as you go through these things, it allows an organization to assess the alignment of what I expect in free software, or what the organization expects in free software, and the projects that enable it versus what's actually there. And it needs to be evidence-based. The next tool I would point to is trademarks. So trademarks, I think everyone knows what a trademark is. There's the definition from Wikipedia, which grants permissions to a third party to use a brand or logo, things like that. And this came up for us with the Wonder Bar. And the Wonder Bar was sort of a maker, hacker, sort of maybe Raspberry Pi-like tool from a company. And it was for sale, hefty, nice price there. You can order it online. They raised a lot of money. It was an open source, they said, project. Then they raised, $30,000 initially, up to $2.3 million, then $11 million. But I don't know if you noticed on that first slide is it had the OSI's logo on the box. We got a notice from somebody saying, pointing this out to us. And the open source initiative is trademarked. And so we were able to stop that use of our mark. And I think the use of trademarks can be a useful tool in addressing many of the tests that the Wired article sort of prompted. So Moodle is a great example, and they're doing this now. And for folks who don't know, Moodle is a learning management system for delivering online courses. So how appropriate, considering our platform that we're delivering today. But this is for colleges and universities and elementary schools and K-12 primary schools to deliver content online. It's released under the GPL. And they have a very strict trademark policy. You can't use the name Moodle without their permission. And they give permission to use it to schools. So this is not a copyright license like associated with that we've been talking about before, like the open source licenses or free software licenses. This is a trademark license. So they're licensing the use of the word Moodle so you can associate yourself with the organization. And you can't use it if you're a company that wants to support Moodle unless you pay for the use of that based on how much revenue you're getting from your Moodle work. You can't use it in your domain name, so you can't host it. So like the cloud providers, or you can't say, oh, we offer Moodle, Bluehost, you can spin up your Moodle environment here. You can't do that without permission.
Patrick, I'm sorry, it's up. You have 5 minutes, so if you want to take questions, perhaps it's a good time to just wrap up, okay?
Okay, well, this is perfect timing because here's the example of how to become a Moodle partner. And they offer different levels. And I think it solves these problems. And you hit perfect timing. So if there are any questions, I'd be happy to talk. All right. Try to answer them.
Thank you, Patrick. It was really, really, I really enjoyed your conversation. Even I just watched it while I'm just looking for the IRC channel. I was really helpful. So one main question is everybody thinks that it's a good talk. And one question that actually strikes me most, so I will relate first. What on earth, this is exact phrasing, what on earth does a license have to do with political issues? So also there's another follow-up question came. Is it possible to somebody just stay out of the politics in regards of licenses? What do you think about that?
So the first question was, what on earth does a license have to do with politics?
Yes.
I think what we're seeing are some licenses are being developed in order to address perhaps political or social or economic issues. So they're using the license as a tool to address concerns they have. So I could say, my license doesn't allow for insert political issue here. So you can't use it unless you vaccinate your children. I guess that's not a political issue, but you can't use it if you vote for the Republican Party can't use it. And then the Republicans could write software and put in the license, oh, the Democrats can't use it. Or, I don't want to get into too many hotbed political issues. you know, I want to respect everyone's, you know, views on the, but the licenses are being used as a way to address issues that some people might have in it. You know, I don't want my software used by organizations or people that, I feel are not helping the world, or, you know, so the, you know, so I don't know if that's answering the question. So
I think so. Maybe another question that may stick to it. So what's the, what's ethically wrong with restriction on a commercial use?
What's ethically wrong with commercial? I think that, the issues that we've seen raised on licenses that restrict commercial use are really around people who are upset that they're spending a lot of time on a project, maybe donating their time, and their output is being used by a commercial entity to make a profit without giving back to the project and the contributors. So again, they're using licenses to say, it's not fair that you're exploiting my work to make a buck and you're not sending it back. So I'm going to restrict the use of commercial, the commercial use of the software, and I'm going to enforce that through a license.
All right. Well, it's logical. And somebody
else. So I just want to be clear, I'm not advocating for these, because from the OSI's position, and I don't work with the I don't work for the FSF, but working with them on several of these issues, the restricting commercial use is not something that free software licenses or open source licenses allow. So these licenses would not be recognized by those two organizations. I'm just explaining, trying to explain, hopefully, the rationale behind people who create these licenses.
I understand. Well, we are our time is up, and well, if you have any last remarks, maybe that's the time. I'm really sorry for the people that ask questions, but seriously, I'm really under pressure about this time.
Sure, that's fine.
So please, just your last words, and we thank you a lot for this.
My last words are thank you, thank you, thank you to all the folks who put this together in such a quick time. It's been fantastic and a great opportunity. And also, I'm happy if you want to send me any questions that I wasn't able to answer in email, I can send them back to you and you can post them or distribute them if you feel it's helpful. Thank you again.
Okay, Patrick, thank you very much. Have a nice day, night, wherever you are. Take care.
All right. Bye, everyone. Right. Thanks for listening.